Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
This is 45 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Joe Goldberg is back from smoking his cheese.
I've been smoking cheese. You have to chop it up fine and make sure you dry it when you roll it up.
I don't know. I was going to say something real nasty when you posted
it. Do it.
That. Do it. No, I didn't want to. What kind of cheese would it be? No.
Let it go. It's not Hawaiian and it's not some like cheese. It's Swiss and Gouda.
Gouda.
Gouda. Stock up for the summertime, because if you smoke your cheese during summer, it has a tendency to melt right through the grate. So that's usually a bad, messy.
Ben and Gouda. But it's not summer for you already. You know, I've been in the 80s here. I'm in Kanakistan, and it's in the 80s.
I'm in the Chicago area right now. Is cold.
What's wrong with you?
I don't control the weather. The government controls the weather. I keep telling you that.
Oh, right. Like everything else. Have they paid you this week? You know, they're paying me.
Well, somebody should.
Well, they tell me, so then I can give conspiracy theories. Well, now, when we talk on that, it's a good takeoff. So now we've got an all-star wrestling author here. He's done all sorts of stuff. And from what I hear, he's a real hottie.
Anyway. Frump up.
Boo. So, Chris Hottie, thank you for being here.
Good to be here. Thanks, guys.
Hopefully you say that later.
He's proud that you got your name right. That's all he is.
Yeah. No one gets it right on the first try, so kudos.
Well, you know, that's all I do. So how did you get into this world? I mean, it says that you're born in San Antonio, Texas, and now you're this all-star writer. How did that happen?
This world or the writing world? I mean,
The writing world, writing yeah. World. Not I know. Kind of figured how you got into this world.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't think...
Yeah, see, we'll draw that out for you.
Yeah,
some hand puppets here. If you want me to give you a visual demonstration of how?
See, I would like that, but I don't think the audience would care for that much.
Just give them a movie,
you know. I mean, but I'm thrilled because you know your credits include Moby Dick, and now that's a favorite.
Well,
but
that was one of the ones got made. So I mean, professional writing, I've always been a writer. In high school, bad imitation Ernest Hemingway, in college, bad Charles Bukowski, imitation, poems. In New York City, I imitated Sam Shepard, as a playwright. And then finally decided to stop imitating other better authors than myself and just try and be my own writer. And I started writing screenplays. Reading screenplays is really how I learned how to write them. I was reading screenplays and books for a New York-based film producer, Gabe Katzka, The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, the original.
Ooh, classic.
Yeah, a great movie and a great place to learn what a screenplay was supposed to look like and read like. And that got me out here where I am today in Los Angeles. And for 35 years, I worked fairly often. I was able to support myself and a family and all that good stuff, writing all kinds of screenplays in all kinds of genres for just about every studio. And then I guess around 2017 or so, the jobs that I was looking at were becoming less and less interesting to me, the opportunities. And the marketplace for the kinds of movies that I wanted to write, my original screenplays, that marketplace was changing. Things, believe me, have only gotten worse in the world of movies and screenwriting. Just go to your local multiplex to figure out how. And so I was having lunch with another screenwriter, and we were pissing and moaning about the state of the business, and he told me that he was writing a novel, and I had never heard of such a thing. It had never occurred to me. And it sounded like a lot of work, because in screenplays, the words don't go from margin to margin. There's a lot fewer of them. But anyway, I thought I would give it a try and you know, just start one day on an idea I had that I had had for actually a screenplay that I never wrote. After the first day, I kind of realized that it was all a lot of fun to do that, to write from margin to margin and do the things that I wasn't allowed to do as a screenwriter. And after the first week, I decided this was really something I wanted to do, and proceeded to write about 93,000 words that became Deep State. Within, I would say probably within 2 months, and I know this story is super annoying, that may be super annoying to many, to probably within 6 weeks of finishing that first draft, I had placed the manuscript with the most excellent editor in the world, and especially in that genre, Emily Bessler at Atria Books. And the rest is... Is it history? I'm not sure. I it's something.
You know, who did you sleep with?
Not Emily. I can promise you that. You know, I just slept with myself and had dreams.
With his craft. Yeah.
You must be slept quite with his craft. Guy.
I know. It really does sound like there should be a casting couch somewhere in that saga, but.
Well, there should be. 2 months? My God.
It still feels like a miracle, honestly. It really does to this very day.
Well, but where do you gain the confidence but to do this?
Oh, by having my ass thoroughly kicked for 35 years in show business.
I thought
business.
He was going to say something else.
No, not kissed. Never. No, I was a screenwriter. Didn't I tell you that? I wasn't a studio executive. I think you absolutely have to have that confidence as any kind of artist, whether you're a musician, painter, sculptor, or dancer, whatever. You have to have just a full-blown confidence that you can do it, because any number of people are going to stand in your way and tell you you can't do it. And if you don't have that confidence, then you'll quit. I love writing. I've always loved writing, even through all those bad imitations of Hemingway, Bukowski, and Sam Shepard. I enjoyed doing it, creating something, and I still do, still really enjoy it. So that's where I think, you know, I love to do it. I love to write. So it's confidence almost sounds like arrogance. It's just something I love to do.
Well, the obligatory question is, when someone's written in so many different types of writing, is what's the difference that you found, and what skills did you have to change, augment, or slice off to go from writing 120-page script to 93,000 words or a poem, whatever it might be? How did you change when you were moving along?
Well, you know... ignorance is bliss, Joe.
I know all about that.
I didn't really know what the hell I was doing when I sat down that day. I didn't do a lot of, you know, God knows I didn't take a class or a course. I didn't. Are there novel writing books? There certainly are script writing books on how to. But
oh, yeah.
I just kind of, you know, I just did what I thought. I wrote the kind of book that I thought I would want to read, and I think the screenwriting was just an excellent preparation for writing a book, because, and I've said this a million times before, but in Hollywood, people hate to read. Anyone who's written a screenplay, anyone who's been involved in the business knows that people in Hollywood do not like to read your work, and that's why my first job, the first job for many people in the business, is as a reader. Because no one wants to read. So they pay like the most lowly schmuck to do it. But eventually people with power, people who can make your movie happen, do and will read your script, or whether it's an actor or a director, they are going to read it. And so it has to really be screamingly good. Each word has to be, you know, it's concise. So the words have to have texture. They need to pop off the page. I mean, I've heard all these cliches, either in terms of like why they didn't like the screenplay or why they did. But invariably you will hear that kind of critique of whether or not the reader in Hollywood, the power broker, the person that counts, is really pulled into the story and the characters and the dialogue. And so I think all of that just has distilled my prose, if you will, into something that I think, that I hope, that I strive to make grabby and have texture and pull the reader into the story and make the words pop off that page. Because I can't tell you how many times I go into a bookstore and I pick up a book that I've heard about, and I turn to whatever random page, and the words just lie there, and I put the book back. I want the page. If you're going to turn to any page of my book, for it to convince you to crack your wallet open and pay that $25 or $19.90 or if it's on the remainder, the $7.99 to purchase that book. There's lots of stuff that. Did I leave anything behind in terms of skills? I really don't think so. What it really became, and why I'm so, you know, wildly happy about this latest incarnation of my writing life, is that I was able to amplify on all those skills and bring so much more to the finished product than what I was allowed to do as a screenwriter. So there's just lots of things that, you know, that I do in a book that I could not do in a screenplay. And I'm really enjoying that process.
You know, writing this kind of subject, you know, this deep state and things like that, what draws you to that? And with such an intense last, I don't know, 5 or 6 years with politics and society, do you kind of have to dance around what really goes on in the world? Or how do you balance that?
Well, that is a challenge, because there is so much fodder in the real world for us thriller authors, I think. But it's all a bit loaded, isn't it? It's difficult. My third book, Storm Rising, the book that's coming out is the fourth book that's out on May 23rd, 2023, is The Devil You Know. The third book came out a year ago, and that was Storm Rising. And that book, I started that book in the kind of the early stages of 2020 pandemic America. And there was lots of crazy stuff going on that we all probably would rather forget about. But the political scene was quite nuts, quite insane. And, you know, that Storm Rising, that book truly reflects the craziness of the time that I wrote it. I think I began research, looking around for an idea and researching that idea before, like in the late 2019, before the pandemic. And what seemed, I had seen one article, one very small article, short article in one of the military magazines or periodicals, and it was about white supremacy in the services. I thought, well, that's pretty juicy. I mean, that's interesting. You know, the military has all the big guns. They're trained. It's one thing to be, you know, Joe Bubba driving a pickup truck. But it's another thing to have a guy who's trained how to fire an Abrams tank, you know? So I was drawn to that idea because it just seemed dark and sexy and full of potential drama and interesting. And my beat has been less about international threat and more about, you know, threats from within. You know, the call is coming from inside the house. That's interesting to me because I just don't think a lot of other of the authors in the genre are doing that. And that's kind of what Deep State was about. You know, so I just decided to follow that theme for my books, for the Haley Cho books. And so white supremacy in the military seemed to you know, certainly fit that bill in a big way. But at the time when I first thought about it and was researching it and proposed it to my editor, it was still just such a minor little footnote story out there. When I committed to the book in 2020 and got deeper and deeper into it, that idea of white supremacy in America and white supremacy in the military and all those themes, boy, they came out of the woodwork and suddenly they were appearing on the front pages of the New York Times and Washington Post. They were on the news and not so much specifically about the military, though those stories were there. And certainly there were active duty service members at January 6th. But the thing just kind of blew up from underneath my feet, what I thought was this sort of like a kind of a fairly arcane and interesting dark idea became way more topical than I ever imagined it would. I think people didn't want to hear about it, honestly. So I think, you know, in answer to your question, I think you have to be really careful about how topical this stuff is that we put in our books, because there's a overload already of information, current affairs and hot takes in our social media feeds, in the newspapers, on TV, everywhere you go, TikTok even. So with this fourth book, The Devil You Know, out May 23rd, 2023, I decided that I was not going to be topical. I was not going to touch on any hot button issues that would potentially, I think it's not a matter of like not wanting to piss off readers. I just don't think, you know, I want people to pick up the book and read about the book and say, hey, that's something I want to do to occupy my time and be entertaining. And so I very much decided with this fourth book, the one coming out, that, it would be pure thriller. I think it's, you know, judging by early reads and from both friends and super fans who have already gotten a copy of the book and from, you know, just absolute perfect strangers on Goodreads, everyone seems to, this book seems to be popping in a way that it's just different. It's not getting a better reception. That's a very, very long-winded answer to your question about, I think you have to be very careful about it. I think you need to, I've always avoided politics in terms of party politics. There are two words you'll never find, or probably there are four words you'll never find in any of my books, Republican, Democrat, and leftist and right, or right wing or left wing, whatever. I have always avoided that. All that notwithstanding, I think even more so, it probably behooves a writer, at least this writer, to steer clear of stuff that's just already too much in the nonfiction world.
Well, you sort of hit a main topic here that I was going to ask you a question about, but do you feel you're on the front edge of the move away from the international thriller to the domestic thriller? I mean, who else is, who you got? I mean, Jack Carr is domestic thriller. So, I mean, he's got international elements to it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have domestic issues. I mean, and you're right, that Supreme Court justice is the second, third, and fourth word of your new book. Supreme Court's in the headlines, okay?
Darn it, it's happened to me again.
You're part of the conspiracy, aren't you? The government's paying you, isn't it?
I wish.
It's the billionaires.
I mean, we just have to open our eyes, don't we? I mean, it seems like there's enough controversy and drama within these borders to go around. I feel like the international thrillers just feel like they've really been done to death. I mean, it's very, very hard to do, you know, an Islamic terrorist now. It just feels, you know, knock wood, honestly. I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but it feels like that's of the past, somewhat. Now, of course, by the time this thing airs, something terrible could happen. But I'm just more familiar, you know, with the States. I haven't traveled. I mean, I've been to Europe, certainly. But I seem to know this place a lot better. And I'm, unlike a lot of the authors in the genre, I am not, you know, it seems to break down into two camps, those who, you know, those who have lived the life and those who haven't lived the life. You know, I was never a U.S. Marshal or Navy SEAL or Apache helicopter pilot. You know, I've always wanted to be a writer. You know, I just kind of follow where my imagination takes me, and that's my most... That's my skill set, you know, is my imagination and ability to create worlds and characters and write dialogue and provide an entertaining story. Really, I with these books, commercial fiction, I just don't think you're trying to make a, I don't, I'm not trying to make a big ideological point or have a political agenda.
No subtext, no kind of thing that you want people to take away?
Only that I really am like, in the whole creation of Haley Chill is the idea that of, and she has been misconstrued, I think, in some ways by some folks, but, you know, in what I wanted to, in creating her character, she is, you know, in my mind, she is, and I hate the use of this word. I don't even want to use it. I'm not going to use the word.
Synonym. Hit that synonym button.
No, it's just over. It's really, I think, incorrectly used. But, okay, I'm going to say the word. It's the P word. She's a patriot. You know, I'm incredibly proud and consider myself just crazily fortunate to be an American. This is the best country in the world, and it's worth fighting for to keep it, you know, between the white lines. And so when I'm writing my books, it's when we're veering outside, heading towards away from those, beyond those white lines. And so what I see her is as an agent of not change. She's not an agent of change. She's a corrective, to help fix the problems that we, you know, any country, but our country in particular, because it's the one I'm writing about, invariably will make, because of, you know, all the, you know, human traits that cause, you know, things to go haywire. You put a person in, giving them a certain amount of power, whether they're a toll collector or the president of the United States, and, you know, they just might screw up and try and abuse that power that they have over the poor motorist or citizen of the country.
So you're basically Haley yourself.
No, I'm not.
Come on.
I'm not nearly.
He wears the gown.
I was going to say, yeah, you dress up in the character. So
well,
that you can,
only in privacy, my own home, do I have a Haley dress up night. But I do have my Haley Chill action figures all stacked up around my house, which haven't been manufactured yet, but I'm waiting for that call from Hasbro any day. Yeah, no, I'm not Haley Chill.
Well, do you get the question about you're writing a female character? I know it's a lousy question, but you know, sometimes people go, hey, who are you to write a female lead thriller character? You're not a female lead thriller character.
You know, amazingly enough, Joe, I don't get that as much as I thought I would. Especially in this day and age, not again. I'm like knocking wood everywhere I can, right? As I say this, but I probably could count easily on one hand the number of times that I've read a review or heard any kind of comment like that, saying like, I think that would truly be the death of art if a creator of anything, but usually this falls into the world of, you know, book writing and filmmaking and directing and acting, and character, creation of character, I guess, is the common denominator. But I don't. Should I?
No.
Should I
I think it's a factor
everyone,
of writing.
Let's give out your address.
I'm not gonna, you do it. I'll be impressed. Because to get through that is a factor of good writing.
In the last 10 years or so of my screenwriting career, which, you know, I'm still a card-carrying member of the WGA, but pretty much would only at this point adapt my own work and not put myself through the horrors of developing someone else's story or idea for Hollywood. But in the last 10 years or so, you know, I guess I can't remember the project. I think it was a project I wrote for Jessica Alba that never got made. And it was based on a graphic novel called Beautiful Killer. And it was a good script. It never got made. The good ones never did. But that got me started on this track of writing female, generally speaking, action vehicles. And so I did a few of them. And I was successful with them and developed that voice and altered it, that voice for various projects and stories and characters. But, you know, it was, and what motivated it was, is that, you know, often, and same with the book, same with Deep State, there was just not that much representation of female characters. And again, you know, it's not, maybe I ought to suggest that it's some kind of big agenda, or I'm making a big point, or I should wear an armband, or I put a flag outside my house. But honestly, you know, my business sense told me was to go where the other people ain't, in terms of, you know, who needs to compete with everybody else writing their male action, whatever, protagonists, when it seems like, you know, there's 50, 51% of the population is not male. And, you know, so purely mercenary, kind of business-like decision to fill a vacuum, in a possible vacuum in the marketplace. I think probably the series suffers, perhaps, because some people, some readers, fans of the genre, will just not accept the idea of a female protagonist in that genre. But that's an easy, you know, in that case, that's an easy decision for me to make. I'll still do it just because I feel like it is right, you know, I'd like to think that, you know, readers of my books are people with imagination and intelligence and curiosity to see things that they haven't seen before, you know, in terms of these stories we write.
Plus, what would you do with all the Haley outfits you have around the house?
Yeah, and the wigs. Don't forget about the wigs and my blue contact lenses that I put in to change my brown eyes to blue.
It's a song.
Yeah, and you should write a song. Yeah,
what? She's a boxer. Why is she a boxer, Chris?
She is a boxer. You know, in sort of her origin story, you know, she comes from a rough place. One of the inspirations for her character was Jennifer Lawrence's character in, I can't remember her character name, in Winter's Bone. You know, she comes from a tough world and has to fend for herself. And in creating her childhood, I imagined her defending herself and her younger siblings with her fists. And that, you know, that begat an idea of her, you know, transitioning from the sandlot to the boxing ring. Just seemed like a natural way to go, and a way for her to differentiate herself in the military, because she does enlist in the military in order to escape a background that really was offering her a choice between a teenage pregnancy and drug addiction. And so she does go to the military, and that's where we find her at the beginning of Deep State. And she's about to climb into the boxing ring against a much bigger and more skilled opponent. You know, just a way to telegraph her toughness. She doesn't really use that. She does actually use it in, she does use those boxing skills in Storm Rising. I was going to say she doesn't use them in any of the books, but she uses it in a fairly critical way in Storm Rising. But it's weird, you know, a few of those anonymous reviews and Goodreads or or Amazon have used the word superwoman to describe her, and which, you know, probably of anything, any reviews that I've ever read of my stuff, that was the one that cut, because I intentionally did not want her to come off as, you know, some kind of impervious, unbreakable, no weakness superwoman. I thought, you know, in sort of preparing that backstory for her, of her upbringing and enlisting as in the army and a female boxer who, at least at first blush, does not come equipped with kind of the, you know, the support of a, you know, the CIA or the military or all any of that stuff, or, you know, she's, you know, in deep state, she's really comes off as sort of a fish out of water intern in the White House. I mean, the furthest thing from a superwoman. I don't think she, even in that introductory scene in deep state where she is in the boxing ring, she wins that bout by just using her head. It's, you know, she is overmatched physically and skill-wise, but she uses her head, and she recalls a famous fight and how a pro boxer won his bout and uses the same strategy to defeat her opponent. So, again, another long-winded answer to your simple question, but none of these questions are ever that simple, I guess. Why a boxer? Because it seemed cool.
Well, it gave you depth of character. It's everything you explained.
Yeah, yeah.
He's probably in his room with boxing outfit and a dress. Come on.
He watches Rocky, that's
how. I had, wearing boxing gloves. You know, I did a few movies about mixed martial arts, and it probably has a lot to do with it, too, though. The protagonist in those movies was a male. I had an idea. They made three of them, I think. I wrote all three, and then they wanted to make a fourth, Never Back Down. And by this point, they were straight to DVD, and I had just sold Deep State and was busily preparing to write the second book, Savage Road, and I didn't, I took myself out of the running to write that fourth Never Back Down MMA movie, but I gave it to a female screenwriter, a friend of mine, with the idea that it should be about an all-female version of Never Back Down. Little sidebar there about
It all fits together. It's like a puzzle. Puzzle of Chris's life. Hey, can I ask a question on kind of current events then? Because you've talked about so many different types of writing, and the writer's strike is on now for those who are listening, and you're part of the union. But I want to go to the level of, what do you think of chat? And it's ChatGPT and the like, artificial intelligence, and its potential pressures on the creative writing industry. Because that's like the third top issue regarding the strike. Money, pretty much money and AI.
Yeah, I think it's a very big issue. And I what the Writers Guild is trying to say is, like, essentially, you can't use chat or anything like it to write scripts. And more importantly, you can't use chat or AI to create a story or a script and then hire a real person, screenwriter, guild member, to rewrite that script, because in that way you completely cut the human writer out from any kind of, everything is based on who originated the material in Hollywood. That's the only way that you get any kind of credit and the only way that you can make any money at all. Then you would really turn writers into players that day rate, you know, like, we'll pay you whatever, $25 an hour to rewrite this AI created piece of crap screenplay. So that will be a big issue in the Writers Guild strike. And they're not going to I told you what the guild stance was. The studio's response just prior to us going out on strike was, we'll have an annual meeting about it and we'll discuss the issue, an annual meeting. In other words, you know, just a big FU, as they say.
Yeah, we'll form a committee and study it.
Yeah, so I think it's vital, Joe. I mean, speaking more broadly, look, it would be easy for a company to have AI create books like ours. Super easy. And I think if they sold them successfully, then they would do that, and they wouldn't buy our books from us, the publishers, I mean. I mean, it's a business. So I think you just have to, you know, content creators, which is a horrible phrase anyway, but creators need to be smart and proactive, another horrible word. I'm just tossing them out right and left. I'm actually, our conversation is being AI generated right now. So, look, I don't want, I'm going to explore how to protect my work from being used as data for AI. I don't want my work that I created being taken for free and folded into some giant, you know, database that a company controls and turns around and uses that data to create new content. No thanks. Don't use my stuff. That's just one way to I think, take a stand about it. In terms of using it as a tool or as a research tool, I think it could be very valuable. And I think authors should probably embrace it as a way to do research quickly and perhaps, you know, and there's some fine lines here, but to generate ideas. But in terms of creating prose that you like pass off as your own, I think that's a big no-no. So it's obviously complex and nuanced and something that is kind of the earth is shifting underneath our feet every day about this. And I don't think the landscape will look like it does today in 12 months' time. I think this stuff is really happening fast.
I tell my class, my mass comm classes, that if you want to be a writer and you have a beating heart, this is gonna impact you.
Oh yeah.
If you're on this planet and you have a beating heart and want to get into it,
yeah,
for the rest of your life, this is gonna be an issue.
So
you better get on the train and figure it out.
I think it's something more important than I can't think of maybe the creation of the internet. You know, I think it's gonna be that impactful. And you can't pretend that it's not happening and I'm not going to go near it or whatever. But I think, you know, like I said, I want to explore how I can protect my own content that's not, you know, won't be used against my wishes. And I think everyone who's ever created any kind of, again, that word content, but I can't think of a better one right now, needs to, you know, kind of protect themselves.
I mean, you can feed all the Chris Howdy books into the computer. It can read it. It'll say, hey, write me, Haley Chill book number this, and it'll do it.
It'll do it. And it right now, it would probably be a piece of crap, but I mean, we're at early stages. What will it look like in a year? In a year, I like to think that I'm such a weirdo that I come up with, I mean, maybe AI can imitate my weirdnesses, but
You're going to crash AI if your weirdness.
You know, writing. I don't know. I mean, I did try to do things that will surprise a reader, you know, big and small, you know, big twists and also just in word choices and stuff. But I guess that's the whole idea of AI. It can mimic voice. So I think it's so early stages. It's already so, I mean, it is amazing what these things can do. Large language models, LLM, is that it? Large language, yeah, LLMs. We're, you know, relatively speaking, we're geezers. But, yeah.
Well, Joe is, yeah.
He and I are about the same age, so watch out.
If you're teaching, I love teaching. I'd love to get, I want to find some young people to vibe off their energy. Yes.
Well, let me tell you a story then. A year ago, in one of my classes, one of my students brought up this technology called ChatGPT. It's going to write, I teach you misinformation. And he showed how it wrote this misinformation article in class. I'm like, wow, I've never heard of this. Now it's almost exactly 1 year ago.
Really?
And here we are a year later, and it is everything.
Yeah.
No one had heard of it.
I hadn't heard of it until last fall. I mean, And then when I did, I was just blown away. I just felt like, Lord, we're living the future. I mean, I just didn't think AI was a thing. I thought we would have to deal with the stupid metaverse in our immediate future. And, you know, what a total bust that turned out to be. And then, you know, they just kind of switched hats and put this one on. And, like, this one really seems impactful. And, you know, I think it is going to be hugely important outside of, you know, the entertainment and book world and film world and stuff, just in terms of how, you know, everything, it's going to affect everything. It's really remarkable.
But how do you stop it?
Oh, you don't stop it. There's no stopping it. That's like saying, you know, how do you stop the plow or well, vaccines. I was going to say vaccines, but maybe people are trying to stop vaccines.
How do you stop those cars? We ride horses. We don't need those cars.
I think how do you stop it from them using your stuff? Like you say, protect your stuff and all that.
I'm sure there's legal language. I mean, these things are going to become court cases for sure. I mean, look at the Drake stuff with music. I mean, how does he feel about that? Whereas you have other artists like Grimes, a wonderful Canadian, I believe. Grimes is Canadian, yeah? You know who Grimes is? Grimes was...
I'm still trying to figure out wonderful Canadian. Grimes,
the pop singer, kind of alt-pop, married to Elon Musk, or were they married? Has a couple kids with him, at least. But anyway, you know, she had a completely different attitude about AI that, you know, Drake, you know about how the AI created Drake song, Drake and the Weeknd, and yeah. They got all pissy about it. Grimes says, take my voice, whatever you want, put it through your, you know, all my fans out there, put it through your AI, you know, bots, and create a song, and as long as you pay me half of the royalties, I'm good to go. So that would be like me saying, take my books, put them through your AI, your favorite AI generator, and put them up on, you know, self-publish on Amazon, and as long as you pay me, you know, half of the royalties that you make off those books, those Haley Chill books that you create with AI, I'm good to go. I mean, that's not how I feel. That's not what I'm saying, but some artists might say that, you know? I mean, I don't know. Ask another author how they would feel about that, but it's one way to kind of get your brand out there and make money. I just have a different feeling about it, philosophy.
Well, there you go. See now, Joe, you have a new way of doing it.
I have used chat for the ideas, the research he's talked about. Yeah. In fact, and how can you not? Now, I actually wrote in to see how it would do if I typed in some of my keywords and said, hey, write me this character, and it isn't very good. But it's going to get better, as you say. We're at the very pointy end of this. If you're a writer who's listening and says, I want to get into this business, this is the thing you got to be knowledgeable about.
I haven't used it yet. I have not used any AI yet. I haven't touched it. I've just been so focused on the next project that I just, you know, it's like, it's such a thing. I didn't want it to be, it'd be like, I don't know, like bringing a 800-pound gorilla into my writing office and saying, stand over there in that corner while I finish this. I have to kind of like clear my head, clear the space, not be working on anything at all, and then kind of really take a look at it. But with the latest book I've written, I think in terms of research, it could have been phenomenal. So I'm anxious to kind of roll up my sleeves and kind of see what it's all about. But, you know, it's all happening so fast. It's not like, oh, I need to master this now so I can use it, because the darn thing is changing so fast. And who knows what the, you know, legal ramifications are.
So are you available on social media? Where do people find Chris?
Well, it depends. If I'm wearing my Haley Chill outfit.
You're on an app? Yeah, which app do you go on?
That's a different app that, you know, I don't
know. There's lots of Reddits for that. Hit Reddit.
Check Reddit. Check Reddit for my Haley Chill impersonation videos. I am on the usual suspects. Except I didn't do the TikTok because I do believe the potential for harm is there. I don't think they're surveilling us, but quite like the
harm of someone seeing you dance.
Yeah, exactly. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Insta. Chris Hottie. It's pretty very findable, and I enjoy Twitter. I'm less inclined to be on Insta and Facebook, but it's there. I have a website. It's chrishottie.com, weirdly enough.
You can watch him ski on his website.
Yeah, I haven't put that on the website yet. That was on all the socials. Twitter. Yeah, that was inspired by my good buddy Connor Sullivan, who did that bit. Alan, you had Connor on, right? You had Connor Sullivan?
Yeah, big Butch Montana guy.
Yeah. And you know that he's a former, like, I don't know how far along he got in skiing, but he was extremely good. And so I thought it was a really good book promo where he, from the top of whatever his local mountain is, but it looked high, he's skiing without poles, holding the book in one hand and one of those invisible selfie sticks in the other. And he's going really fast, man, in that video. I thought it was pretty dynamic. And so my idea, I was going to make a joke of it. I'm always trying to kind of make a bit of a laugh promo-wise, not be boring. So my idea was, originally, I was up at Mammoth Mountain, the local mountain here, and I was going to go down the bunny slope and do the Connor thing, except on the bunny slope. And then I realized, well, about like three people are going to get that joke. So they won't know, like, why is this idiot on the bunny slope acting all excited about, being on the bunny slope? So I went down a green run. Like, it was fairly steep, but it was icy out, and it was really hard. So thanks, Joe, for bringing that up. It was my moment of complete humiliation that I did.
Olympic glory.
I didn't look half as good as Connor, but I didn't make a joke about it either.
You know, we'll have your website and everything up so people can find it and your new book out May 23rd, 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, 2023.
Thank you very much for being on the show. And we appreciate you and all the work you do. The book, of course, is called The Devil You Know. And, of course, the author is our guest, Chris Hottie. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks, guys. I really, really had a good time being chatting with you guys.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.